Welcome to the Embodying Aware Parenting Podcast.
Exploring what parenting feels like from the inside out with Sarah Devoy and Vicky Plomer.
Hi Vicky, it's good to be back with you today to explore and deepen about our nervous systems. And I'm kind of quite excited about this one because last time we were talking about things that are perhaps a little bit more obvious about our children's behavior and our own behavior, as in sympathetic outbursts and stuff like that. But what happens if, you know, and let's face it, in our culture, these outbursts aren't really socially acceptable most of the time. So, you know, certainly I can say for me that I learned another way. I certainly learned to suppress a lot of my feelings, which, you know, in my understanding now of the nervous system, that's very much about that suppression. And it's kind of about that parasympathetic freeze state. So that was the topic we were going to explore. So would you like to say a little bit more about that, about what that might feel like in your body or how you've observed it in your family?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, dissociation is the term that Aletha Salter uses in Aware Parenting to describe that, as you mentioned, that parasympathetic nervous system where we dissociate from where we are. So we go into that freeze state so that we can suppress these feelings that, like you said, maybe we're not allowed to show. And absolutely, I can remember times in my childhood that I was too big. I was too out there, too much emotion, too big. And, you know, let's tone that down a bit. Let's keep that, you know, let's not show all of that. Let's keep that a little bit quiet. Maybe when you're out in public, well, let's not be embarrassing and share all that. So then you learn that there's areas that in life, maybe school or with certain people, that you just suppress and you don't really show what's going on for you or how you're feeling. And you might dissociate from your feelings. And so as you said, yeah, what does that feel like in the body? And it might be actually that you're just numb to your emotions and actually you don't know how you feel. And I know for my oldest son, that is how he can be. He can be quite numb to his feelings due to his upbringing, due to the schooling system. You know, he dissociates from that. And, you know, can't I say, you know, how did you feel in that? He's, I don't really know. You know, he's got no connection at the age of 17. To what he's feeling. And so bringing that connection back into the body can be quite a scary thing when you've not truly felt some of these feelings. And I remember a friend ringing saying, I've just actually felt really upset about something that happened and I've not really felt that in my body and it's a really uncomfortable feeling. And I was like, yeah, it can be so uncomfortable when you start to feel again, to sit with those big feelings and notice kind of how debilitating for some it can be to feel in the body sadness or anger.
And I suppose for some reason I love to bring it back to the animal kingdom. And if I think of, you know, because I like to be really practical for me because it's so important, this theme, isn't it? And I just remember this moment when my lovely, lovely dog grabbed my beautiful rabbit by the neck, and I feel that he was actually trying to bring the rabbit in because he'd always see us kind of trying to stop the rabbit running away. And so he grabbed him by the neck, and of course our darling little rabbit froze, so went in effectively into a dissociative parasympathetic shock state. And I thought, oh my god, my rabbit's dead. But very, very slowly and very beautifully, as happens in the animal kingdom, this little creature started to shake. My little rabbit started to shake, and literally, you know, we brought him into a safe place, but very, very slowly, he basically came back into his body. He kind of literally unfrosted or defrosted when he felt safe and able to. And it's just another kind of a layer to it. I was actually scared. I was so scared that my rabbit was going to die. And I have to say, rather beautifully, my youngest child was giving me constant feedback. Oh, no, he's okay, mommy. He's starting to breathe again. Oh, he's shaking his head. Is that okay? And she was kind of tracking him so beautifully and stroking him throughout. Whereas I felt for some reason it triggered a freeze response in me because, you know, I hadn't been taught, as you were saying, to really be with feelings, to be with deep sadness, to be with shock. I didn't nearly know what to do in the moment.
Yeah, it's so beautiful, isn't it, that you can witness and see how someone can come out, especially after such a traumatic episode to happen on the rabbit, you know, to go the whole body, to feel the bite and then go into that shock. And then, you know, to slowly, when feeling safe, how the body can heal. I think that's such a key part when we're working with ourselves or with our children, is how we can feel truly safe to feel again and to feel deeply. And how do we hold that space for our children to feel fully safe in their nervous system to explore how they're feeling? And that, I think, can be quite a long journey in the aware parenting world. If it's not something that you've, you know, I didn't start aware parenting when my children were young. I started when they're older, you know, 14. So how do you, for that, all those 14 years of not feeling safe to express, how do you begin to slowly bring safety for them in their nervous system to start to express how they truly feel? And for me, that was a real backwards and forwards, checking in with how I was, really like noticing, did I feel safe in the moment to hear the big feelings? And because I would often shut the kids down with not even realizing, you know, I'd be distracting them or trying to fix them or, you know, really saying all the things that I wished I had, you know, that I wanted to hear for myself. Nothing that was helping them at all. I wasn't, you know, they weren't really needing any of that. They needed just to be heard. And I was going into all these other states trying to make it all right because I wasn't feeling safe. So when I leaned into my inner journey and inner child and kind of healed some of my stuff, then I felt more in a space to be able to sit and hold a safer space for my children. So I think when you're noticing your children dissociate, maybe through screens or nail biting or food or, you know, just they might just be daydreaming and lost in play and not really present in the moment. You know, when you see though that kind of reaction with your children, I'm wondering, is there anything you could offer to invite a parent to start to interact and bring that child back into the here and now?
Oh, totally. Well, how about we make a little pause moment, because it's so heartening to hear your story, Vicky, and how, you know, I'm really getting that sense that you had to put your own little traffic light on in a way and say, okay, I just need to pause. And, you know, in a way, how can I bring myself, when I hear the word disassociation, it has that feeling for me of being out in the cold alone in the dark and it's raining and we're having to do it all by ourselves and suddenly seeing, oh my God, my children have got all these patterns. But how can we just give ourselves that warm hug? So that's what's coming to me at the minute. I'm just going to do that thing of putting my right hand underneath my heart, underneath my left armpit. And then I'm going to bring my left hand around my shoulder and just give myself that gorgeous, tangible hug, just to really slow it down. And as we've been saying, it's that aspect of parenting ourselves and helping ourselves melt a little bit, isn't it? Just feeling how that is in our heart right now. Yeah, it's like when I feel into that word disassociation, I feel as though I'm bringing fragments of myself from all around. It's like a shattered piece of glass, a shattered piece of a beautiful bowl, just drawing all those little fragments back together. Do you know that gorgeous image of the Japanese bowl that's all kind of gilded together with gold? That makes the most precious pottery, when all those pieces are melded back together again with gold. So taking a moment just to warm up our bodies, coming back home to our embodied presence. That's great. Yeah, and as I'm doing that, I'm just noticing more awareness in my, yes, with my breath. But for the listeners, I'm kind of wondering if people are feeling a little bit more whole and present in their pelvis, away from the buzz of the brain, and just inviting more of a sense of wholeness and aliveness in the whole of their body. Yeah, and actually I'm allowing that feeling just to tumble into my legs a bit. I'm just going to press into my feet, just to remind myself I do have some wonderful, wonderful feet. So I have the freedom to come back in my body now. How are you doing, Vicky?
Yeah, great. It's lovely, isn't it? Just to connect in for a minute and to connect to the environment around you, to notice what your body is connected to in the space, and to notice what's happening inside for you as you explore some of these topics that can be quite, you know, eye-opening for some when you really reflect back on what it was like for you to share your feelings as a child. You know, how was that in your home with your parents? Would they allow you to scream, shout, rage, cry, or was your tears met with, you know, an unpleasant feeling? How was that for you? And connecting into how you responded and how you now share your emotion with your partner. Do they see you cry, rage and laugh, or is it quite, you know, detached and still stuck in? What is that like for you right now? I think it's an interesting one to just reflect on and allow us to be vulnerable with the feeling of how comfortable we are and how aware we are of what's happening for us in our body, especially in this busy culture of go, go, go.
Yes, no, that's a huge one. And as you say, a huge one for us to even start to observe in ourselves and in our children. And I could come in with a little story if you like.
Yeah.
And one little story, and as you say, it's very interesting to look back in hindsight. But as others may have been hearing on the other series, that I had a loud first child. So it's very interesting about what happens to the second child, or the third child perhaps as well, or if there are others. But certainly my feeling at that time when I felt I was juggling so much, as long as I've got that loud one sorted, you know, then the other one will be okay, because she doesn't seem to ask for much, actually. She doesn't even really make a lot of loud noise, and she just goes into her room and she sucks her thumb and she goes to sleep. So she's okay, isn't she, Vicky? I don't need to worry about her. So, okay, so years later, in fact, you know, here I am. I mean, my lovely daughter, who's my middle child, she's coming on for 22, 23 now. And it was only last Christmas that she told me, "Did you know what I was doing when you thought that I was being minded by somebody else?" And I said, "No, I have no idea. I assumed you were playing football with those people that were playing, trying to placate the loud one." And she said, no, that was just way too much noise for me. And he was so center stage. I needed something for me. So this lovely woman, who is now extremely in tune with nature, decided to separate herself from all of that. And she actually sat in a treehouse by herself and told me that she spent a lot of time looking at the woodlice. So at one level, I'm really proud that she resourced herself and found ways to be in nature. And she seemed at some level quite content, but that was an incredible one for me to say, wow. And I never saw that. I never even thought that she might have needed something else. I grouped the two kids together and assumed that everything was fine. But of course, knowing that now, I would love to have gone to rescue her, to bring her close to me, and to look at, was there another thing that she might have needed at the time as well?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for sharing, Sarah. That's a beautiful story. And just how, you know, beautiful that she's able to bring that to you now and to share with you now what, you know, how she would allow her emotions to be put to the side, to allow the brothers to come out, and, you know, how she dealt with that. And that, you know, it's for you now to know that, and I'm sure to offer repair and come to her with compassion and compassion for yourself with what you did and didn't see at that time when there's so much going on. It's just beautiful that there is the opportunity to still hear and to still reflect and learn and understand what happened in the home so many years ago.
Totally. And it's interesting because with the, you know, aware parenting tools, if you like, it really worked super with my firstborn, to listen to him rage, to listen to him lash out. And, you know, his expression was quite angry, quite visceral. Whereas when I tried, you know, the listening with her, because in the beginning in our group, which was over 23 years ago, we didn't really know so much about the play. I didn't know that you could bring laughter and more games into it. I thought it was about the crying. And then I tried the crying approach, if you like, with my middle child. And it didn't really seem to wash with her. It seemed to sort of implode her in a very sort of silent way. And it was nearly like I'd caused offense to her, that I was really kind of making her pain worse. And I wasn't getting her. It was a misattunement somehow. So with her, I said, oh, well, maybe she's just got another way of handling it all. And the fact that she was thumb sucking, I didn't really link it. And I thought, oh, maybe she's just sort of, I didn't really see the self-soothing behavior with her so clearly. Perhaps I wasn't able to see it at the time. So it's interesting how, because it was actually very akin to my way. I guess that was the issue. It was akin to what had happened in my childhood. I used to suck my fingers all the time. I didn't expect to have connection from my mom and dad. I thought that's what I should do to get myself to sleep. So I hadn't understood there could be anything else. And I think, yeah, that's the excitement, I guess, of the aware parenting journey. It never is complete. And here I am with my children in their 20s, you know, like yours, getting that much older. And, you know, there's still so much more that we can be with and release and connect with, which is gorgeous.
Yeah, I love that point that, you know, about trusting actually the timing, because as you said, if it was akin with kind of how you were and your experience of your suppression of emotion as a child, you know, actually trusting the timing to when you need to hear that and heal any parts that might have come up, that you're reserved and that you're ready for it. And often I feel like I know for me, when I heard about aware parenting, I wanted to do everything all at once. I listened to every podcast. I was trying every, you know, completely overwhelming my nervous system. We're trying to heal every which way and learn everything. You know, I just wanted to write. Now this is a way that I can actually connect with my children. Oh, I can see what I've done. I can, you know, how I can bring compassion. And I just love that actually, if you can just take a minute to sit back and trust the timing, that what is ready to be healed and what is ready to be connected and understood and brought into the here and now is when you're ready to receive it and to then process it. And so with our children, often I find, you know, especially when they're more in dissociated states of numbing or zoning out, it's a hard one to sometimes get straight in and change. You can't change that, you know, and it's a journey to working with them and bringing that safety into the space so that they feel to slowly come. And for sometimes it can happen really quickly, but other times I think the longer term, you know, thumb sucking or habits that might have kind of built up over time, it can take a little bit of time to really bring true safety to allow that to settle and for emotions to come out.
Yeah, because it's even recognizing them. And I guess, you know, it has to begin with us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, what does it feel like? I mean, you know, we could perhaps both speak about, you know, feelings that we had as children. I'm sure I was living in Brighton, so ice cream, Mr. Whippy ice cream was quite a thing. And I've so many photographs of me with an ice cream in my mouth, you know. So I imagine maybe my mother was giving me a bit of ice cream in the afternoon to kind of keep me happy, or what she perceived to be quite happy. So it's not necessarily bad. We don't have to get rid of every ice cream, do we? And we don't have to get rid of every screen. But even feeling what it's like in our own bodies, that for me is a handy thing. Like, I know if I'm actually tired and maybe even a little bit low in mood in myself, a classic thing that I could find myself doing would be looking at the screen. I'm being a bit of a zombie. I'm sure you wouldn't own up to being a zombie, Vicky, but you know what I mean? Just looking at things and scrolling and not really wanting to respond. And it's a very kind of a bland feeling, isn't it, Vicky? That sort of very bland, sort of neutral, I'd almost say flat face thing. I think, you know, Alicia talks about it, not having a smile and even being quite compliant. And, you know, we're not moving our body, are we? We're kind of very passive. And there's those elements of it, and just being curious about how that feels. It might even feel a bit like a bottomless pit for me sometimes. Do you know what I mean? And this, oh God, I know I should get out of this, but I can't, and I don't want to. Did you relate to that in your body? Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I can be sat scrolling and then going, what am I even looking at? I'm not even taking anything in here. What is this happening? And then go, oh. Or for me, sometimes I find, because I home educate my two younger children and I'm with them, you know, all day, and they've, you know, got a 13 and a 5-year-old that have, you know, quite different needs. And sometimes they, you know, they're talking at me and like wanting to do stuff. And I've realized they probably said the same thing about 3 times, and I am just not, I'm not even hearing them. You know, I'm not even like connecting, or I've just responded and gone, oh yeah, we can do that. And, you know, it's about watching a film or something. And I'm thinking, what? Hold on. No, I haven't got time to do that today. Or I don't, that's not what I really want for them, or, you know, whatever it is. And I've kind of agreed to something or said something, and I've got no idea why I've done it, or where it's come from. I've just been so disconnected to the moment. I've been exhausted, or, you know, just too much pressure on the nervous system by trying to meet both their needs and not thinking about what I might be needing in the moment. Or I've done their lunches and not got round to mine, or sat down for the day and I've done the washing, or thought about, you know, all that kind of stuff, and then work things. And then you suddenly I realize it can take a good, you know, probably 20 minutes, half an hour. And then I'm suddenly like, oh, I really have no idea what you've just spoken to me for the last, you know, I have to go back and go, really sorry, kids, I've actually not been fully present. Can we go back over what we just said, you know? And I've just been dissociated from the here and now, and yeah, and not connected in. And I can find that it can take me by surprise. And absolutely, like you say, when you're tired, or when I've, you know, had lots of days where I've been meeting others' needs and not had space for my own needs, or not even asked myself, you know, how am I doing today, or taking any steps just to connect in with my body, I just go through the motions, I think, and then find that I've not really felt joy, or not really, you know. I just sometimes, when my husband buys me flowers sometimes, and my little one actually likes to buy me flowers, so I stop sometimes and look at them and go, oh, and really see the petal, you know, really smell them and just take them in. And then I go, oh, okay. Right, now move on to the next thing, rather than next thing, next thing, next thing, next thing, you know, just taking a pause just to go, oh, okay. And I've done that when I have my breakfast. I often try to sit by the window so I can look up in the morning and see the sky and notice what the day is like outside, and then check in with myself with how I'm feeling in that day, from seeing all those grey clouds and thinking, oh God, and then, you know, how does that affect me, what am I feeling in that moment? And then have that choice, you know, remind myself it's my choice how I proceed with my day. It's my choice with what I'm going to take from today. It's my choice with how I'm going to respond to the children in this moment. I get to choose that. So, you know, having those stop moments to do that is really helpful for me, to bring me into the here and now.
Yes, no, it's lovely the way you've expressed that, actually, and that word about the choice, because, I think it's quite in our language as well, that feeling. And I just wrote, scratch a few words down here and see if you kind of relate to these words, because when we are in that sort of parasympathetic state, when, as you say, everything has gone a bit of a blur, it nearly is like we're underwater, isn't it? Like we're kind of flooded, like that's sometimes a word that I would use, we're swamped. You know, we might say we're 10 foot under, you know, it's all just like, oh yeah, we're just absolutely in this functional mode. And I sometimes think of the Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz. You know, we're going about the business, the food's on the table, the stuff's in the washing machine, we're tickety-boo, we're in control, so-called, but we're kind of not present. We're kind of out to lunch at some emotional level. And, you know, it's lovely the way you say that, even that simple thing of having your breakfast in front of the window, calling in the nature. And it's like, again, somatically, I'm really with that feeling that, for me anyway, the parasympathetic is a bit contracted. It's like a bit narrow vision, isn't it? And then how can we perhaps expand again and breathe again, and as in come into the whole of our being again. So it's like that expansion, that expansive heart once again, to, like, I'm thinking of the Tin Man warming up, putting a little light in his belly to sort of warm up his heart, you know, the heart that he gains. Because it is that frozenness, isn't it, that we can sometimes feel, you know, and then recognizing, as you say, first in ourselves, and then saying, ooh, you know, would we really recognize in that in the, our kids when they're in that kind of state? I mean, we haven't spoken much about so-called control patterns and how we can actually end up keeping our children in a little bit of deep freeze, can't we? Do we want to talk about that today?
I mean, yeah, let's touch on it. I mean, it's such a part. I think the one thing for me is the screens that, you know, that are here in our world, and, you know, being in the gaming, I've got children that are into the gaming and the, you know, but it's the connection with the friends on the screens and how they interact with people, you know, it's a real part of their world. And again, how can you facilitate that connection? Is so vital for teenagers and tweens to have a connection with their peers. It's so vital. But in a space where they are able to connect back into the here and now, and that, you know, it's that sense of urgency when coming away from a screen, or the sense of urgency when needing a bit more food, or the sense of urgency to just keep playing that game, you know, when that's happening, that's often a control pattern that actually the nervous system is really struggling to connect back to the here and now, or wanting to stay in a different state. And as we're on dissociation, you know, perhaps it's that, like, they come off and they're not really quite able to connect in with you. You know, there's not really much eye contact. There's not really much, the language is kind of, yeah, no, you know, the one answered, or the, you know, they're a bit off somewhere else. So in that frozen state in their body, and how we might allow them to stay in that. I notice with my 5-year-old, if he watches TV, you know, he's like lost in that world. He's gone. And I'm, you know, you say, okay, do you want a drink? Do you need anything to eat for tea? Do you want a drink? He can't answer with the TV on. That's about 3 times. Nothing. So, you know, I have to pause the TV, have a bit of eye contact and say, do we need a drink right now? What's happening? You haven't moved. Are you, you know, but when the screen's on, it's that frozen state in the body and mind and not able to respond. You know, I see that quite, and you think, all right, let's maybe do something else right now. Yeah. So yeah, that keeping them in the dissociated state, in the frozen state, can be quite, you know, happens really quickly.
Yes, and as we were saying at the beginning, it's interesting how those so-called frozen states, are in a way sort of more acceptable, aren't they? You know, maybe more convenient sometimes, because, you know, we've got our friend over, we're having a cup of tea, and somehow, oh, they're playing quietly over there. Ooh, the telly's on, maybe for 10 minutes, and then it drags on to another 20 minutes or whatever. But there is aspects of it that are way more convenient because, you know, they're being minded. And of course, you know, with compassion to ourselves, sometimes we need to do what's easy. We need to do with what we can cope with in the moment. And at other times we can challenge the behavior a little bit and say, well, you know, the fact that they're self-soothing all the time, or they're sucking their thumb, or maybe even head banging in some cases, or rocking backwards and forwards. There can be lots of states that kids do that, you know, may not be the most skillful and healthful thing for them. They may be just things that they've learnt behavior of some kind. And deep inside there might be feelings that we can perhaps develop play strategies around, which might be something that we're going to be talking about next time, isn't it? Like, what are the options? Because once we've identified the states, like, you know, you can't go in there with a bomb, can you, as you say, and sort of say, hey guys, let's just defrost. We need to kind of find a more skillful way. And you know, how do we do that? And maybe we didn't really grow up with a lot of play. So it's quite something, isn't it, to see what works for us as a family.
Yeah, and I think it's that healing state that we're going to discuss in our next podcast about how can we create a healing state. And so if they are, you know, rocking or head banging or biting, or, you know, or they're in a space of zoning out, watching the TV, and, you know, that extra half an hour's gone by. If we walk in, turn it off, right, that's it, let's do this, you know, or stop the rocking, stop the bang, you know, how is that? Are we feeling safe in our bodies when we're intervening? Are we able to be open with a space that can hold what's to come next? And like you say, are we inviting it in a way that is, you know, a child's able to really lean in and actually connect to you in that space? Or does it come in unintentionally in a authoritarian approach, perhaps, or permissive? Oh, maybe 5 minutes. Maybe we could do another couple of minutes when you're not too sure whether you really want to put a limit in because you know what's about to come. So yeah, it'd be interesting to explore that a bit further and how we can create that and discuss that more.
Yes, and obviously, you know, there can be really, you know, poignant times when a tween or a young person may want to be alone in their room or appear to want to be alone in their room for long periods of time, which, yeah, that can be a big negotiation, can't it be? And say, well, is that okay? Are they disassociating? You know, or do they need their space? And, you know, that can be a big one to navigate, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I love the democratic approach that Aletha brings in, where we can really ask ourselves, what is our limit on this? How do we really feel? Okay, yeah. All right, actually, it feels comfortable for me to you to have half an hour on your own, and then I'd love to connect in with you. And then they might say, well, I want 5 hours. And then you go, okay, so how can we then meet in the middle and agree an hour to start with and review it, or whatever it might be. But having that ability to listen to our child and actually allow ourselves to compromise and really hear their point of view, and, you know, respect where they're coming from and respect their choices, but also knowing in our mind what right going on underneath, so we can have a kind of overview of what might need to be put in place if there's, you know, some dissociation happening.
Yes, and I as we've said before, is checking in with our healing state, that, you know, particularly if you know, we may be looking for something from our child, which is another one. And so making sure that our needs are met, possibly through a listening partnership, which is very much a part of the Aware Parenting, you know, project. So it's like, how can we get those needs met first? So we're making sure that we're not seeking connection with our child to sort of, you know, validify us as parents or something like that, because we need to make sure that we're coming from a whole and a healed place ourselves, ideally. Yeah,
and trusting their journey in how, where they need to be, and not, like you say, putting our journey on them, but allowing them to have their own journey in the world, and know that that's their path to take, and that that's something that they, you know, with our support, of course, but that we can trust that their timing as well as our timing.
Yeah, and I just really love, you know, the way this is unfolding, Vicky, because we have perhaps both of us, between of us, older kids. So it is quite fun to look back in hindsight and say, look, wherever anyone is on their process of being a parent, you're going to get it reflected back. And it is actually dynamic and fun for me to hear from my 20-year-olds, you know, oh my God, you did that. But yeah, you know what? We're working that out and we're doing this now. Do you know, if I was a bit controlling around food or something like that when they were small, I just got a lovely story last night from my daughter. She says, yep, you did restrict us a lot on chocolate. You know what? I kind of have my chocolate store. I feel emotionally secure because I've got my chocolate in my fridge. And do you know what? There's always chocolate there. I don't stuff my face with it anymore. I've finding my own balance around it, Mum, so you don't need to worry. It's so affirming, isn't it, when we get that back? And I know when we're in the throes of working with much younger children, we don't get that affirmation back. So just hang in there. That's what I'd love to share, that, you know, those, the joy will write it, the joy will come through.
Yeah, it's beautiful to hear that. I think it's really reaffirming, because like you say, when they're younger children, you're just doing the best you can with the information you have at that point in yours and their journey. And therefore you can only offer what you can at that point. And, you know, a bit of crossing fingers and hoping that you're on the right path. But like you say, when they're older, actually to have the beautiful conversations that you're having with your older children and the connection. And, you know, my 17-year-old said, oh, I know, I don't mind looking after his younger brother who's 5. I don't mind looking after him because I know how you like parents. You know, I know the way that you like to parent, and I'm not sure others get that. So I can step in and do that, you know. He's recognizing the play that I might bring, and he's happy to step in and offer it, which has been beautiful.
Wow.
To see that witness. But yeah, I think it's a beautiful journey when you can trust that actually the bits that feel a bit sticky can kind of right itself later on and have the conversations later.
Yeah, totally.
But I look forward to our next discussion around how we can hold a healthy state for healing.
Yes, health is always possible, Vicky. I think it's exciting.
Thank you for listening. Aware parenting has been life-changing for both of our families, and we'd love to hear your reflections and answer your questions.
Contact Vicky and Sarah on the links below. We both offer a free introductory consultation. We'd love to hear from you. Let's discover the joy of parenting together.